It was 10 years ago. A masked man with an assault rifle shot three people in North Augusta and killed one of them.
North Augusta is a small town in the American Southeast, which rests right along the border between South Carolina and Georgia. It earns its name due to it being the northern chunk of the Augusta metropolitan area, which stretches out from Georgia's Richmond County into South Carolina's Aiken and Edgefield counties. North Augusta is the more rural part of the Augusta metropolitan area. The Savannah River separates not only North Augusta from its southern counterpart, but also separates Georgia from South Carolina. Augusta, Georgia may sound familiar to some of you. It has been the setting of some prior episodes of Unresolved, including that of the Millbrook twins, Tiffany Nelson, and even the unknown serial offender I gave a moniker to, the Shaw Creek Killer. It is North Augusta which provides the setting for today's bonus episode, although this story bears no similarities to the prior Augusta-based episodes. This is the story of the North Augusta Huddle House shooting. Huddle House is a 24-hour diner-style restaurant, which is regional to the East Coast. It is known for serving greasy fast food, which, where I live, makes it a good place to go for night owls and those that might be a little intoxicated. Being an outsider to the area, Huddle House has been explained to me as a sort of alternative to Waffle House, another regional institution. In addition to serving as a late-night destination for college kids, Huddle House is also a go-to breakfast hotspot. In North Augusta, South Carolina, a group of old retirees who called themselves the Board of Directors met up at a Huddle House on most mornings to grab coffee and talk amongst themselves. The Huddle House destination they met up at, which was off of Interstate 20's Exit 5, was located along Highway 25. It was in a busy area, full of fast food restaurants and tiny shopping centers, so it wasn't exactly isolated. Among this group of friends, the so-called Board of Directors, were two men named Earl Carter and William Powell. Earl Carter, Reverend Earl Carter, I should say, was a family man who served in the clergy of the rural Little Horse Creek Baptist Church. William Powell was a 61-year-old father of two. He and his wife, Mary Alice Powell, had been married for decades, and they had two daughters, Laura and Beth, who had both grown to adulthood and were now married. William Powell had worked as an engineer for the Georgia Department of Transportation for over 34 years. He had retired in 1996, and almost a decade later, at this point in 2005, he was just enjoying his free time. Reverend Carter and William Powell had long been friends. Best friends, if you'd ask them. They enjoyed meeting up with their other friends on most mornings, and enjoyed a cup of coffee to catch up on each other's lives. It had become a common part of their routine, and more often than not, they met up at this quaint little Huddle House location, where they were well-liked and well-regarded. Unfortunately, all of that changed in November of 2005. It was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, November 22nd, when the group of retirees that jokingly referred to themselves as the Board of Directors sat together inside the North Augusta Huddle House location. It was a cold morning, in particular a cold morning for the area. Falls and winters in Georgia and South Carolina are usually pretty moderate, but this morning carried a max temperature of 58 degrees. So this morning, before the sun even rose, temperatures were just above freezing, and the skies were overcast. Reverend Earl Carter, who sat with his friends inside the Huddle House, later recalled, quote, "I had an uneasy feeling about that morning." At around 6 o'clock a.m., sometime after the group of retirees had gathered inside, trouble was brewing at another nearby establishment. A woman named Constance Davidson was on her way to work and was waiting in the drive-thru lane of a nearby Burger King. While she was waiting to pull forward and get her food, a strange man walked up to her car. He was holding a gun. The man, who looked very ragged, pointed the weapon at Constance and demanded her car. Immediately, she was hit with a fight-or-flight reaction, and she stepped on the gas pedal. Her vehicle sped forward, and knowing that the strange man had a gun, Constance did her best to duck down as her vehicle pulled away. As she moved, she could hear a couple of gunshots behind her. Quote, "When he fired the first shot, I remembered thinking, he's shooting at me. Then, when he fired the second shot, I felt it hit me. The second gunshot the unknown man fired hit Constance in the back, but she continued driving until she got to a nearby gas station down the street. There, she was able to call for emergency assistance and informed authorities that a gunman had opened fire in the parking lot of this North Augusta Burger King. Constance Davidson would survive her gunshot and would later be taken to the Medical College of Georgia, where she was admitted in stable condition. However, the gunman that had wounded her didn't give up after his failed carjacking attempt. He simply moved from the parking lot of Burger King to another establishment nearby, the Huddle House, where the board of directors were just finishing up their breakfast. It was just after 6 a.m. when Reverend Earl Carter and William Powell finished up their morning conversation, and they prepared to part ways for the day. They stepped out into the crisp morning air and began heading to their cars. When William Powell pointed out the young man heading in their direction, Reverend Carter later recalled, quote, "Powell said, 'Preacher, that man right there has a gun. I turned and looked and I saw him raise the gun, and then the next thing I know, I'm talking to the chief of police. He never said a word. He just ran up and started shooting.'" The gunman, who had sprinted over to the Huddle House parking lot from the nearby Burger King, fired off at least two gunshots. One of the two hit the Reverend in the throat, while another hit his friend, William Powell, directly in the head. It is unknown why this gunman attacked these two men, as he did not try to steal anything from either of them. Neither did they pose a threat to this man, who sprinted towards them. After shooting both Powell and Carter, the gunman ran over to the parking lot of a nearby Circle K and Bojangles, where he carjacked a woman named Ida Mae Heath. Her vehicle, a 1991 Oldsmobile four-door sedan, would become the key component of a major manhunt, which was spreading out from this suburban location. Authorities were alerted to the multiple gunshots a minute or so later, noting in their logs that the first phone call was received at 6:12 a.m. When authorities arrived, they discovered that William Powell had already expired. He was pronounced dead at the scene, while his friend, Reverend Earl Carter, barely clung to life. He was unconscious, but breathing. Quote, "They said on the way to the hospital, they lost me twice." Later that day, when Reverend Carter came back to his senses, he discovered that his friend, his best friend, William Powell, had died at the scene of the shooting. With this tragic and sudden loss happening just days before Thanksgiving, the family of William Powell noted his absence at their dinner table. He was buried later that week, on Friday, November 25th, the day after Thanksgiving. The memorial service was held at the First Baptist Church in North Augusta. Both Reverend Earl Carter and Constance Davidson would recover from their injuries, but the damage done to them, and the family of William Powell, would never truly heal. At least, not while this crazed gunman continued to elude investigators. The investigation into the North Augusta Huddle House shooting became one of the area's leading stories. After all, this had not happened in an isolated location in the dead of night. This was right out in the open, just as the sun was rising. North Augusta Police Chief Lee Wetherington told the press, quote, "Everything we could see about this crime at this point is that it is totally random, which makes this individual extremely dangerous. After shooting three people in the parking lots of Burger King and Huddle House, the gunman had set his sights on another vehicle nearby. This vehicle, which belonged to a woman named Ida Mae Heath, was taken from her at gunpoint in the parking lot of a conjoined Circle K convenience store and Bojangles restaurant. This was a 1991 Oldsmobile, which had four doors and looked like your everyday regular sedan. It was a very normal-looking vehicle, which is perhaps what the culprit was looking for. Roughly 6 hours after the shooting was reported to police, this vehicle was found in the parking lot of a local hotel called the Sleep Inn. This was less than a mile away from the scene of the shooting, along Edgefield Road. When the vehicle was found and reported to police that afternoon, they responded immediately. By the time they got to the Sleep Inn to examine the car, they noticed that the engine was still warm to the touch. This caused them to perform a panicked, hurried search of the immediate area around the hotel. Unfortunately, they were able to find no discernible sign of the gunman in the vicinity. It was as if he had dropped off the car and then vanished into thin air. The 1991 Oldsmobile showed signs of having been driven a good distance in the interim 6 hours. Investigators would theorize that the violent carjacker had driven the car anywhere between 100 and 300 miles, only to return it back to the area of the crime scene. North Augusta Police Chief Lee Wetherington said that authorities had come to this suspicion, that the vehicle had been driven upwards of 100 miles, based on the gas usage. Before being stolen, the car had just been filled up with gasoline, and the gas tank was now close to empty. Investigators began to focus in on the possibilities presented by this carjacking. By their calculations, the entire ordeal had been caused by the gunman's desire to get a vehicle. He had first attempted to carjack Constance Davidson in the parking lot of Burger King, before lashing out and shooting her, in addition to William Powell and Earl Carter. At that point, he had carried on with his original goal, to obtain a vehicle. He then ran to yet another parking lot and stole a vehicle at gunpoint. Police Chief Wetherington noted that the gunman's behavior seemed to temporarily escalate after he was thwarted by his first target, Miss Davidson, and stated that the gunman was probably, quote, jacked up on something and mad that she did not give in to his demands. He was the big guy with the big gun. But after getting this vehicle, where had he gone with it? Estimates put the distance anywhere between 100 and 300 miles, which could take him to a number of populated areas. He could have gone nearly anywhere in Georgia, South Carolina, or even North Carolina, and then back again. Did he need the vehicle for another illegal or nefarious purpose? Was he transporting something? There's no way to tell. Then, there's the last possibility presented by this, that the culprit had returned to the area because he was a local. He had dropped off the car at the Sleep Inn parking lot because it was close to where he lived or was staying, and then disappeared into the surrounding area. In addition to questions posed by the vehicle, police had their hands full trying to identify the weapon used by the crazed gunman. Police were able to determine that the type of ammunition used by the gunman were 7.62 by 39mm Wolf brand shells. At least 5 shell casings were recovered from the scene, which showed that the culprit had used this pretty cheap form of ammo. Based off of the ammunition and the descriptions of the weapon provided by the survivors and witnesses of the shootings, it was believed that the gunman had used an SKS assault rifle, a type of short-barreled gun which came with a fold-down stock. This weapon was a semi-automatic rifle, which had a capacity of 10 bullets. John Lewis, the owner of Carolina Precision Rifles, said that this was a very ugly gun, which had likely been imported from China. He said that it was an easy gun to get a hold of, and was popular with drug dealers, and other such delinquents. Quote, "A lot of people buy them because it's just an inexpensive gun. It's very possible he stole it. He may have bought it, but if he was crazy enough to buy it to do what he did, he probably couldn't have passed the background check." North Augusta Police Chief Lee Wetherington expanded on this, saying that the weapon wasn't seen all that often in Aiken County. He said that it was usually found in larger, more metropolitan areas with a higher crime rate. Quote, "It's the weapon of choice for people who rob banks." Very little about the suspect could be determined by investigators, who struggled to find the identity of the gunman. Most of the evidence they had on him, specifically, was little more than speculation. Security footage of the locations around did not show any glimpse of the man, and no witnesses got a really good look at him, other than those that had been shot and survived. A wanted poster carried the man's face, which had been created using police sketches offered up by the few eyewitnesses. This poster carried the first description of the gunman, stating that he was a white male, between 20 and 25 years old, who stood anywhere between 5'4" and 5'8", and weighed around 180 pounds. He had brown hair, with dark eyebrows, sandy brown hair, and he was wearing a heavy multicolored jacket, as well as a black or dark blue ski mask, in addition to heavy brogan shoes. Unfortunately, the police were less than positive about the wanted poster being enough to obtain the identity of the gunman. After all, the two major witnesses to the shooting, the victims themselves, had gone through a traumatic and painful ordeal with this culprit. They had been shot by the gunman just moments after seeing him for the first time, and their recollection was spotty at best. About the wanted poster and the suspect description, Chief Wetherington stated, quote, "I wouldn't rely totally on it, no." In addition, shooting survivor Reverend Earl Carter stated, quote, "I have no idea who got shot first, me or Powell. It happened so fast. If the guy responsible was standing next to me, I wouldn't recognize him." In the immediate aftermath of the shooting, it was theorized that the gunman was a transient who might have found himself in the area. After all, the shooting happened nearby a major intersection, right where Interstate 20 and Highway 25 intersect, and there were several thousands of vehicles that traveled through the area on any given day. This transient theory, which I found in at least two different publications in the aftermath of the violent incident, stated that the gunman might have jumped into the back of a tractor trailer headed out of town, perhaps at a nearby truck stop. This theory seems to have been abandoned entirely by investigators. A few months after the shooting, a psychological profile was created by SLED, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, with assistance from the FBI. This profile stated that the gunman likely lived, worked in, or frequented the area that the shooting took place in. This is how he was able to get in and out at least twice, without being noticed by anyone. This profile also stated that the killer likely had a history of conflict with others, that he had an unpredictable behavior and an explosive temper, that he likely had a criminal history, including possible charges of domestic violence, assault, and/or drug offenses, and that he likely kept up with the case through the media, in which case he probably tried to deflect blame or tried to rationalize his crimes by blaming the victims. It is also worth noting that police officials stated that they were able to recover forensic evidence from the scene, a DNA sample which they believe belongs to the killer. This sample was submitted to the National Forensic Database, where it has yet to score a hit. The investigation into the North Augusta shooting would carry on through the end of 2005, and has continued on for over a decade now. The investigation, which has consumed the time of North Augusta police officers and officials in the North Augusta Department of Public Safety, has received over 300 tips from concerned citizens in the area. At least 12 suspects were thoroughly investigated by detectives, an exhaustive search that led investigators as far away as Delaware and throughout the Midwest. However, all of these suspects have one thing in common. They were eventually cleared of any wrongdoing by investigators. Detective Tim Thornton told the media, quote, "It's disappointing. When you're that close and you think you're onto something, but then an alibi comes up that's airtight, it doesn't matter what kind of gut feeling you have. You have to move on. Case 2005-2742 will be on my tombstone." Following the shooting, Reverend Earl Carter struggled to deal with the loss of his good friend William Powell. The loss was sudden and tragic, and, like many victims of violent crime, Powell had not been given time to say his goodbyes. In addition to the emotional toll the shooting took on him, Reverend Carter struggled with his own wound. After all, he had been shot in the throat by the same gunman that killed his friend, and he had to go through several surgeries before he could be discharged from the hospital. When that day finally came, weeks after the shooting, Carter continued to suffer from nerve damage. He still does, to this day. He constantly struggles to speak, since he lost his tracheotomy and has to rely on one vocal cord when he talks. In addition, he also lost half of his eyesight in his right eye. Despite all of this, the emotional pain and anguish, the countless hours spent in surgery and therapy, etc., Reverend Carter continues to hold on to his faith. He says that he holds no ill will towards the shooter. In fact, he encourages him to come forward and help relieve his own conscience and to get right with God. He says that he, quote, never had any animosity, never had any hatred. But the first thing I want to say is that I forgive him. And if he'll repent on his sins, the Lord Jesus Christ will forgive him too. Constance Davidson, the first victim to be accosted and shot at by the crazed gunman, on the cold Tuesday morning so many years ago, refused to speak to the press following her release from the hospital. She survived all of her injuries, thankfully, but simply felt like keeping quiet about her ordeal. Likewise, when it came to the family of murder victim William Powell, his wife of several decades, and his adult daughters, as well as other members of his family, chose not to talk to the press, following the tragic loss of the family's patriarch. The group of friends that met at the Huddle House every morning, the retirees that jokingly nicknamed themselves the Board of Directors, continued to meet up for coffee. According to North Augusta Police Chief Lee Wetherington, these men were not going to let a shooting get in the way of their routine. Quote, they've been doing this for about 20 years. However, following the tragic loss of William Powell, this board of directors decided to move their meetings to another location, to a nearby S&S truck stop. They never really spoke about the tragic loss of their friend, accepting it as a tragic loss that went unspoken. In 2008, a bridge in Augusta was named after William Powell. He had worked for the Department of Transportation for over half of his life, and his former colleagues felt like it was within their power to honor him in some small way. The State Route 104 Bridge, which overlooks the scenic Augusta Canal, was named after William Billy Powell. Police officials continued to chase down leads in what was becoming one of the most high-profile cold cases from the area. But as 2008 came to a close, investigators were less than enthusiastic about their future prospects, as Lieutenant Tim Thornton said, quote, 1 year after it happened, we could continue to ask potential suspects where they were last Thanksgiving. But 3 years later, it becomes more difficult to say where you were. It's a little more difficult to establish an alibi or even to combat a suspect's alibi now. The following year, 2009, saw a modicum of national interest drawn by the story, after it was featured in an episode of America's Most Wanted. This is when the North Augusta Department of Public Safety, who had been working on the case alongside the local police force, reiterated their interest in finding the gunman responsible. John Thomas, the North Augusta Public Safety Chief, said as much. Quote, when I got here 8 months ago, one of the priorities was the Huddle House case. We are not going to stop until we solve this thing. Years continued to pass. 2015 marked the 10-year anniversary of the case. Unlike most anniversaries, this one carried with it a somber reminder that the crime was still unsolved. Both Earl Carter and Constance Davidson had to live with daily reminders of the terrifying incident they had been a part of. And the family of William Powell remembered the day with a somber reflection of his life. Lieutenant Tim Thornton, often seen as the driving force of the investigation, told the media that detectives were continuing to follow up leads. He remained hopeful that they would be able to find justice for the victims and their loved ones. Quote, the murder rocked North Augusta. It was a big deal. People still talk to me about it. They want to know what's the latest. I would love for somebody to give me the information that I need. As of this episode's recording, a $10,000 reward exists for information that may lead to the apprehension of a suspect. The story of the North Augusta Huddle House shooting remains unresolved.